Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we start with a warning for motorists in rural East County to beware of a driver with flashing blue and white lights posing as an emergency vehicle. Stay tuned for details on that. You'll also hear about a trend right out of the Wild West. Water wrestling is on the rise during the statewide drought. A landmark ruling on a San Diego case involving concealed carry permits has gun rights advocates celebrating, but groups concerned about gun violence say the fight isn't over yet. Also on today's show, find out why the owners of a massive solar energy facility want taxpayers to foot the bill to pay off its federal loan. Our newsmaker interview today is with Art Neal at New Media Rights, who serves on a consumer advisory committee to the Federal Communications Commission. He'll be talking about net neutrality and how commissioners might vote after President Barack Obama came out this week in support of protecting net neutrality on the Internet. In the second half of our show on Destination East County, hear about an array of fun activities across our region coming up in November as we move into the start of the holiday season, from free concerts to a pomegranate festival at a camel dairy, as well as the Mother Goose Parade and the Thanksgiving Day Waddle and Trot 5K run to benefit Santee Santas and the Santee Food Bank. Learn why volunteers are needed to help restore a creek in the Alpine area. Hear about a San Diego State student who fell to her death over the weekend. On Green Scene, learn why the recent sighting of golden eagles in Hacumba could be important as decisions are made on proposed major energy projects in the region. We'll also have some home safety tips for you today. Plus, to get in the holiday spirit, we'll be replaying the holiday edition of our East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. This is Miriam Raftery with an important alert for motorists in the rural area of Jamul. A vehicle with flashing blue and white lights and religious stickers on it has reportedly been impersonating an emergency vehicle on East County roadways. The Deerhorn Valley Antler Community News site has sent an alert which reads, "There is an apparently disturbed individual that drives Honey Springs Road at night, comes behind unsuspecting drivers, and flashes bright, official-looking blue and white lights. Then he follows the driver, refusing to pass, even when the driver being followed slows way down. One woman finally pulled over because she thought it might be Border Patrol. It was very dark, and she didn't realize she stopped right at the ledge of a steep drop-off. She was frightened and angry, with both of her kids in the car." Now, according to that Antler alert, the car has numerous religious stickers, including one prominent one that reads, "Got Jesus?" Impersonating an emergency vehicle is illegal under California law, and both the California Highway Patrol and the Sheriff's Department have been notified about this problem. If you see this vehicle, please call 911 or report it to the sheriff at 619-565-5200 or to the CHP at 858-637-3800. If you do see flashing lights behind you and you're in an isolated area, call 911 and ask them to verify if this is really a legitimate officer behind you or not. And if in doubt, drive to a well-lit area where there are other people around before you pull over.
Water wrestling is on the rise across California in the worst drought ever recorded. A thriving black market for purloined water has arisen, leaving authorities scrambling to catch thieves and lawmakers looking to stiffen penalties for stealing water. Here are just a few of the more outrageous examples. In Eureka, thieves stole 20,000 gallons from the Bridgeville Elementary School. Left with no running water, the school was forced to shut down temporarily, Associated Press reported. In the city of Lemoore, crooks hooked up hoses to siphon water out of at least four fire hydrants, according to an article in National Journal titled, "Drought is Taking California Back to the Wild, Wild West." Water robbers stole thousands of gallons of water from a tank at a fire station during the height of fire season in the Sierra Nevada town of North San Juan. Pot farmers have stolen a whopping 1.2 billion gallons of water, the equivalent of 2,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools, for illegal marijuana grows, according to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Marijuana Enforcement Team. In the past year, wardens from the team have discovered 136 dams, reservoirs, and elaborate piping systems to steal water for pot growing, including some large operations on state park lands, NBC reports in the Bay Area. A major frustration for victims is finding out that the State Water Resources Control Board has just 22 employees to investigate water theft statewide. In addition, penalties in some areas are far less than the profits to be made off the ill-begotten gain. In Contra Costa County, the fine for stealing water is just $25. In Mendocino County, where stealing water is still a misdemeanor, one supervisor wants to make it a felony crime, similar to looting during a disaster. Communities are struggling with how to stop water theft. Some are setting up hotlines to report water thieves and sending out patrols to follow up on tips. Neighbors are also helping keep an eye on nearby properties reporting suspicious trucks. New laws are also being enacted to combat the problem. The Plant Act, Protect Against Narcotics Traffickers Act, increases penalties for trespassing to grow marijuana, which authorities hope will diminish water derived from pot plants. In addition, Governor Jerry Brown recently signed a law that increases penalties for illegally diverting water for any use to $1,000 a day, plus a $2,500 per acre foot penalty. Those who violate a cease and desist order can have penalties jump to as much as $10,000 a day, the Fresno Bee reports. The new law also empowers the State Water Resources Control Board to order emergency curtailments on streams that are at risk of running out of water. But until a prolonged rainy season ultimately brings an end to the drought, thieves will no doubt continue to be tempted to take water, leaving their victims high and dry. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
The U.S. 9th District Court of Appeals, in a divided 2-1 decision, ruled this week that California's Attorney General and gun control groups cannot appeal a decision that granted broader concealed gun carry rights in a San Diego case. Gun owner Edward Peruta had challenged Sheriff Bill Gore's restrictions on carrying concealed loaded guns in public places. In February, a court ruled that the sheriff must issue a permit for a concealed weapon to Peruta, who said he wanted to carry a gun for self-defense, even though he did not prove any specific threat had been made. A permit can still be denied if somebody has a criminal record or serious mental health issues. San Diego Sheriff Bill Gore opted not to appeal the lower court ruling that broadened gun owners' rights and has begun issuing permits pursuant to that court's decision. The case has been cited as precedent, prompting many other California counties and law enforcement departments to do the same. California Attorney General Kamala Harris and the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence appealed the verdict after Sheriff Gore declined to do so. But two of the three appellate court justices found that Harris and the gun control advocates had waited too late to do so. Now, it's still possible that the full court could decide to hear this case. Meanwhile, Jonathan Lowy, director of the Legal Action Project at the Brady Center for Prevention of Gun Violence, says the court's decision barring Brady chapters from defending what he calls San Diego's sensible concealed firearms policy is contrary to prior Ninth Circuit and Supreme Court precedent. The group is weighing its legal options. He adds the shooting deaths of unarmed teenagers Jordan Davis and Trayvon Martin by licensed concealed carry holders highlights the dangers created when law enforcement is not allowed to prevent dangerous people from carrying guns in public. Make no mistake, he says, we think San Diego and any other city has the right to reasonably restrict the carrying of loaded, hidden handguns in public, and we are confident that position will ultimately prevail. But gun advocacy groups contend that citizens should have a right to carry guns for their own self-protection. Joyce Malcolm, a law professor at George Mason University Law School, concludes, a right to bear arms is no right at all if you need to demonstrate a need to carry that firearm which satisfies the police. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Ed Moreno with the Green Scene Report. Controversies over Ivanpah, the world's biggest concentrated solar energy facility located in the Mojave Desert, are heating up. Its owners borrowed $1.6 billion from the federal government, taxpayer money to build the project. Now they're seeking a loan from taxpayers for over $500 million more to pay off that debt. That's right, they borrowed money from you, and they want you to pay off their bill. It's not like the owners are impoverished either. Ivanpah is now owned by Google, the internet search giant, along with NRG, a giant in the renewable energy industry. Julian Morris, vice president of research at the Reason Foundation, calls the proposal an egregious abuse that is obscene, particularly since taxpayers won't receive any of the revenues the plant is supposed to generate. Moreover, the facility has thus far failed to measure up to its predicted energy output. In the first half of this year, the much-touted project has produced only about a quarter of the million megawatt hours promised. NRG blames this on the weather, a curious excuse given that California is experiencing record drought and storms have been rare in recent months. There's another big problem. Some environmentalists now see Ivanpah as a dangerous boondoggle that is decimating wildlife. Ivanpah's concentrated solar technology uses thousands of mirrors to reflect a concentrated beam of sunshine at a tower that converts the heat to steam, creating electricity that can then be transmitted over power lines to fuel distant cities. But it turns out that those mirrors look like water to birds flying across the desert, attracting them to the site. Unfortunately, the technology is burning birds alive as they fly overhead, including protected migratory waterfowl. Ivanpah has been deemed a megatrap for birds by the Center for Biological Diversity, which estimates that the poorly performing project could kill up to 28,000 birds each year. Moreover, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service reports that light at the power tower is attracting massive quantities of insects, which in turn attract birds to feed on the swarms. Ivanpah's previous owner, BrightSource Energy, drew scrutiny from the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee for receiving guidance and support directly from the Obama White House in obtaining federal loans. If this project is so bad for wildlife, how on earth did it get approved? A report released this week by the Department of the Interior's Inspector General may shed some light on the darker side of the renewable energy industry. It reveals an investigation into allegations that Steve Black, a senior official under then-Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar, exerted undue influence on federal wildlife officials, pressuring them to ignore environmental concerns and to win approval for alternative energy projects, all while he was dating a lobbyist for the NextEra Energy Company and angling to get a job heading up the American Wind Energy Association. Two of the projects that Black strived to push through despite serious environmental concerns were, you guessed it, solar energy projects in the Ivanpah Valley.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Art Neal, who is the Executive Director at New Media Rights in San Diego. Art, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam. It's great to be here.
Now, Art is going to be sharing some very big news about net neutrality with us in just a moment. But first, Art, can you tell us a little bit about the New Media Rights and what that's all about?
Absolutely. So New Media Rights is a independently funded program of California Western School of Law. And we're a nonprofit program that has, for the last about 6 years or so, provided free and low-cost legal assistance to folks, artists, to entrepreneurs, to startups, and a variety of independent journalists as well. And so actually this past summer, we just passed our 1,000th case. And, our main service is that we provide that free and low-cost legal services, especially for folks who are creating and sharing information online. And so specialized legal services that relate to the internet. In addition to the legal services, we also have many, many guides on our website. We have 150 plus video guides and many, many written guides for folks to learn all about the issues that we work with. So, you know, when we're working with those artists and those startups, a lot of times we're doing contracts. We're helping them with specialized copyright and intellectual property issues. And so our guides on our website are all about those issues.
Yes, and full disclosure, East County Magazine's show actually utilized some of those legal services when we first got started to drop some of our contracts with our show, so we certainly appreciated those efforts.
Absolutely, and the last piece that we do, and part of the reason I'm here today, is we do policy work. And mm-hmm. policy work, typically we do policy work at the Federal Communications Commission, as well as the Copyright Office. And the whole idea there is that independent creators, consumers and internet users, as well as small tech startups, don't typically have a voice in Washington or really at any regulatory proceeding. It's usually the big companies, the big Right. boys that do. And so we're there trying to bring the perspective of folks who typically aren't at the table.
Yeah, I understand that you were actually on the FCC Consumer Advisory Committee, that's the Federal Communications Commission, co-chairing the Broadband Working Group. So one of the big issues that you've been working on is net neutrality. For those Yes. that aren't familiar with it, it's all about, you know, keeping access fair and equal on the internet. But can you define that a little bit more specifically for folks that don't know what it's all about?
Right. So net neutrality is, and really this is the fundamental way that the internet has worked for the last 20 plus years is on three pillars. And net neutrality is typically means that number one, carriers, internet providers can't block your access to specific websites or web services. Number two, they can't slow down or discriminate against certain services in some way. And then number three, they have to remain transparent about the way they're providing internet service, about all the aspects of how they provide the internet service. So there's three pillars, and honestly, where the games get played is in the devil's in the details, yeah. right? And so when you actually define each of those, that's where people really differ in terms of how they define each of those. But those are really the main three pillars.
Sure. So why should the average consumer care? How would this affect the average internet user or the average person that has a business or even a media outlet perhaps that's on the internet?
Well, that's a really good question, because a lot of folks, I really think that what would happen in the absence of real net neutrality, a real net neutrality move by the FCC, and that really means what we're going to get into, which is called reclassification. Without that, what it means is that consumers would find that slowly but surely what they're used to with the internet would be chipped away, and the internet would gradually change. I don't think that just by not putting in real net neutrality that tomorrow the internet's going to fall apart and not look like it does today. But what's going to happen is there's going to be a gradual slide. Mm-hmm. And you're actually already seeing that. I mean, you saw a dispute. And that's the interesting thing, is that a lot of opponents of real net neutrality are saying, well, that's preposterous. How could this ever happen? How would this ever happen? And actually, you don't even have to look towards the future. You can actually look at what's happened already. And so Comcast and Netflix, for instance, got into it late last fall through early this year, and Netflix was complaining of problem after problem accessing their customers through Comcast. Well, eventually, what did Netflix do? Well, Netflix had the resources to just pay for better access to Comcast customers. But that's the problem. What about the next Netflix? What about the next service that comes along wanting mm-hmm. to compete, who is a startup and wants to compete on the merit? Or if you're an independent journalist outfit like East County Magazine, you want to compete on the merit of your ideas and the merit of your coverage.
There you go. So if we're trying to get news out about, say, a wildfire that nobody else is covering, and, you know, some big competitor has mega bucks and theirs comes up first on the searches, or they can get faster downloads than we can, that seems like it's unfair to folks that might be in these poor rural areas but who really need information now in a case like that.
And that's exactly right. And that's eventually where things could head. You know, you could have every time you're about to access this site that you really like but doesn't pay up to your cable provider, they say, oh, well, talk to two of – but maybe you should go check out two of our sponsors' websites. Maybe you should check yeah. out Fox News or CNN before you go check out East County Magazine. Or exactly what you said, maybe there's mm-hmm. a search engine that it's that only the internet service provider provides, and then all the results are sort of sponsored results, and you have to pay for a higher tier to access all the information.
Yeah, another interesting phenomena about this, net neutrality – I've heard that the FCC has heard more on this issue from consumers than any other issue out there. Is that correct?
Nearly 4 million comments. Nearly 4 million comments, which is great because it shows that people do actually care. I mean, especially in the wake of recent election where there were so few voters.
Yeah.
It's nice to see on some issues that folks will let their voice be heard. So about 4 million people commented to the FCC. And my understanding is the primary sentiment there was for the FCC to provide real net neutrality, which for most people at this point means, you know, real net neutrality means reclassification under Title II.
Yeah, so more people cared about net neutrality than the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction, I understand, which
That's
I think
right.
was the second most widely commented.
Net neutrality has finally edged out the wardrobe malfunction, yes.
There you go. Another issue I understand is the potential for censorship, and I think it's interesting that when you look at who supports net neutrality, we see activist groups on both the far left, the far right, and everything in between, because they're all worried that, you know, some big provider could turn around and say, well, we don't want to have gun rights groups, or we don't want to have pro-abortion or pro-life voices or something like that on here. Is that a legitimate concern?
You know, this issue, that is one of the nice things about this issue. It doesn't have to be a left-right issue, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, for some folks, it's about freedom of information. It's about the ability to communicate in an open way, and for mm-hmm. ideas to be able to compete. For other folks, maybe their reason is more of an economic one. And, you know, for some folks who might look at that economic side, this should be a competition issue. You know, if we had 10 internet service providers, you know, and we all could have very competitive world-class broadband, you know, which world-class at this point, when you're looking at the Netherlands and Scandinavia and Korea and Japan, is a gigabit. Right. And I don't know how many listeners have a gigabit, but my understanding is that it's very, very few people in San Diego County. And so if there were more providers, perhaps there would be world-class service. Perhaps the prices would be lower. But most of us in this county, most of us throughout the country, we really have one or two providers at the most. And so there's mm-hmm. either a monopoly or a duopoly situation. And, you know, what do we do with energy in that situation? Well, it's not like going to the supermarket and choosing from 10 different companies that make a certain type of product, type of pickles, let's say. You know, instead, in this situation, you've got one, maybe two, if you're lucky. And that means that you can't go anywhere else. And that was one of the absurd arguments in this whole process, is that a lot of broadband providers, wireline broadband providers, made this argument that folks will just go elsewhere if they actually changed the internet or started doing things that were against net neutrality, that consumers could just vote with their feet. And that's not true in this industry. And so for a lot of folks, I think that competition and the ability of consumers to choose and to access different types of services and businesses should be, you know, just as strong a motivation as anything else.
Absolutely. Now, the FCC, they have the dilemma of having to choose between regulating this under Title I or Title II, and I understand the courts have weighed in on that. So can you explain to us what the difference is between Title I and Title II regulation, what the courts have said, and what the options are now?
Right. About 10 years ago, when Kevin Martin was the head of the FCC, that's when the FCC actually first classified the internet as Title I. A little more than 10 years ago. It hasn't been that long.
And what does that really mean?
And what it means to say something is Title I is, the easy way to put it is that basically the FCC really doesn't have a lot of enforcement authority. So, And that's actually what the courts confirmed this year in a case called Verizon versus FCC. The FCC was actually sued by Verizon and lost. And basically Verizon was saying, look, as long as internet is classified as Title I, then the FCC, their powers to do anything, to actually enforce any of the original 2010 open internet rules mm-hmm. are almost nothing.
So there's a movement now to try to get the FCC to classify it as Title II. Why didn't they just
right.
do that to begin with? And what do you think the likelihood is that that will actually happen? What powers would they have if they reclassify it this title too.
Sure. Well, the dream back in 2003 that I think Chairman Martin talked about was, well, in a couple years, maybe not only your cable provider, but your telephone provider will also be a real competitor, and we'll also have broadband over power lines, and we'll have all these other means of competition that will help the market move forward. Mm-hmm. Well, that hasn't happened. And so what it means is to maintain the internet as is, when you only have one or two monopoly or duopoly providers, you actually have to step in and classify the internet as Title II. And what that means then is if a company actually blocks web services, or if a company is discriminating or slowing certain web services, or if they're being not transparent about the way they provide service, then the FCC can actually call them on it, mm-hmm. and actually enforce the rules against them. Otherwise, without that, the Verizon versus FCC decision means this. What would happen without Title II is immediately when the FCC actually has a problem with what a company is doing and they go after them, what will happen is the same lawsuit that happened in Verizon versus FCC will happen again. Mm-hmm. And instead of talking about what's appropriate with net neutrality in terms of, well, what kind of arrangements are appropriate for a network management in terms of slowing and speeding mm-hmm. up is appropriate versus, or when's it, when is blocking, you know, not going to be allowed. Instead of talking the specifics, right. We'd just be talking about whether the FCC could even regulate to begin with. And that would just be a waste of time. It would be probably 5 or 10 more years in the courts when we really need, we need this new regulatory regime also because, to be completely honest, outside of some of our big urban areas, I mean, we are falling behind the leaders in terms of Korea and Japan and, right. and Scandinavia and the Netherlands.
Yeah, there's people out here in rural East County that are still only able to get dial-up.
Right, exactly. And that this actually, believe it or not, you know, this plays into that because it really – you know, it's really important on two fronts. There should be net neutrality, but then the FCC actually also needs to do things separately in terms of encouraging competition mm-hmm. and being out there trying to make sure that competition is improved as well.
So back to net neutrality. As we've mentioned, consumers have been deluging the FCC for the last couple of years or more, asking them to take some real steps to protect net neutrality. And it really hasn't happened, but now President Obama this week has yes. come out in support of net neutrality, and I understand has called on the FCC to re-regulate this, not as Title I, but as Title II.
And that's really why we're here talking. You know, that is another champion that's kind of stepping up and saying this is something that's needed. The FCC is an independent regulatory agency, so they do have the ability to make that decision for themselves. The president can't necessarily dictate that decision to them, but you know, it's nice to see the highest ranking government official is stepping up and saying that real net neutrality is important.
Right. And we're going to play for you listeners a little clip of what the president had to say on this issue now.
Ever since the internet was created, it's been organized around basic principles of openness, fairness, and freedom. There are no gatekeepers deciding which sites you get to access. There are no toll roads on the information superhighway. This set of principles, the idea of net neutrality, has unleashed the power of the internet and given innovators the chance to thrive. Abandoning these principles would threaten to end the internet as we know it. That's why I'm laying out a plan to keep the internet free and open. And that's why I'm urging the Federal Communications Commission to do everything they can to protect net neutrality for everyone. They should make it clear that whether you use a computer, phone, or tablet, internet providers have a legal obligation not to block or limit your access to a website. Cable companies can't decide which online stores you can shop at or which streaming services you can use, and they can't let any company pay for priority over its competitors. To put these protections in place, I'm asking the FCC to reclassify internet service under Title II of a law known as the Telecommunications Act. In plain English, I'm asking them to recognize that for most Americans, the internet has become an essential part of everyday communication and everyday life. The FCC is an independent agency, and ultimately this decision is theirs alone. But the public has already commented nearly 4 million times, asking the FCC to make sure that consumers, not the cable company, gets to decide which sites they use. Americans are making their voices heard and standing up for the principles that make the Internet a powerful force for change. As long as I'm president, that's what I'll be fighting for, too.
So, Art, you sit on the Consumer Advisory Commission for the FCC. What do you think the likelihood is that the commissioners are going to do what the president asks and what millions of Americans across the nation have asked the FCC to do here?
So I do sit on the Consumer Advisory Committee, and I should just say, though, any comments I make are in my capacity as new media rights as opposed to necessarily on that committee.
Sure.
But on that committee, we do have the commissioners as well as the different department heads come and report on the things going on at the FCC. And, you know, my hope would be that I do think it's probably going to come down to the chairman in the end. You know, there's three Democrats and two Republicans on that committee on the commission in terms of commissioners. It's not clear where each of the commissioners lie. As I said, there's room, I think, on both sides of the aisle to come over and to support Title II. But, I think that Commissioner Rosenworcel Jessica Rosenworcel seems to support net neutrality and hopefully supports the Title II reclassification. And I'd hope, that other commissioners could support it as well. You know, I think it's probably going to come down to Chairman Tom Wheeler in terms of what he decides to do.
If this does not happen, do you think that ultimately the Internet is going to become a lot more expensive for people and that it's going to be a pay-to-play kind of thing where if you don't want to be stuck in the slow lane, you're going to have to pay a lot more money for the service than you do now?
Yes, I think the Internet will be gradually cablized is what will happen. That would be my best guess, but it doesn't have to happen like that. It doesn't have to happen at all. The idea of sacrificing the basic things that are really good about the Internet just for the idea that cable companies or telecom companies that are already they're very healthy and making quite good profits,
right,
the idea that they could just eke out a little bit more from the system and the fact that there's monopoly providers, it really doesn't make sense to go that route.
So what can consumers do, listeners do, if they're listening in right now and they want to take some action to try to encourage the FCC to reclassify this? What can they do?
Well, that comment period we talked about is over, but, you know, there's no reason that listeners can't contact a number of folks. They, you know, FCC commissioners.
FCC.gov folks. You can go right there and get the phone numbers and the emails for everybody.
Perhaps email or phone those folks and tell them that you care about Title II reclassification. That's what you'd be saying. You want to reclassify the Internet as Title II. And then the other thing is,
protect net neutrality.
Yes. And to contact, you know, even your congressman, you know, because.
Or congresswoman in some cases.
Or congresswoman, of course. and so contact your congressman or congresswoman and ask them to do something about it and to exercise, you know, their influence as well and to let their voice be heard, as well.
Very good. Art, if people want to get more information about the new media rights, where can they go?
So you can come to newmediarights.org, and that's where all our guides and where you can submit to ask for legal services. Everything's right there at newmediarights, all one word, .org.
Very good. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, to know that we have not already spoken about today?
Well, you know, if there's one thing you take away from today, do know that New Media Rights is here in the community, that we are your local San Diego digital rights organization. And, you know, we're here for you and we're always looking to collaborate and partner with folks. So, you know, just for those of you who haven't heard of us, come and check us out. And, you know, we'd love to get to know you.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Art, for joining us today from the New Media Rights on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes a barbecue and beer tasting event, a star party, a health fair, a brass quintet concert, the musical Mulan, and a holiday open house.
Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions such as Woodstock the Musical, Pomegranate Days at Camel Farm, live music in Lemon Grove, a World of Bats program for nature lovers, the Mother Goose Parade, and for working up an appetite for all that Thanksgiving feasting, the Waddle and Trot 5K run.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
Summers Pass Farms in Flint Springs will host an old-fashioned holiday open house on Thursday, November 13th from 5 to 8 p.m. Enjoy Christmas music, hot wassail, and homemade cookies along with live music by Jim Earp. The farm will be illuminated with holiday lights, and visitors can also browse for gifts and holiday home decor in the soap shop and barn filled with trimmings of the season.
Cali Comfort Restaurant in Spring Valley will host the East County Barbecue and Beer Tasting on Saturday, November 14th from 6 to 9 p.m. Cali is located at 8910 Troy Street in Spring Valley. Guests will meet and greet brewers, owners of Hamul Brewing, Valley Farm Market, and Cali Comfort Barbecue. Tickets include slow-smoked barbecue samples, beer pairings, and a souvenir Cali pint glass. For more information, visit CaliComfortSD.com.
Join Mission Trails Regional Park Guide and resident astronomer George Vargas for a star party on Saturday, November 15th. A telescope will be available to view the night sky. The Andromeda Galaxy and its companion, M32, are in position for viewing. Light from these galaxies takes over 2.5 million years to reach the Earth. Plus, the double cluster in Perseus should also be visible in the northern sky. Meet at the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake campground parking lot at 7 p.m. for this three-hour event. For more information, visit mtrp.org.
Presentations of Mulan by Young Actors Theater in Spring Valley will continue this Thursday, November 13th through the 16th. The musical tells the tale of Mulan, who defies the village matchmaker to take up arms disguised as a boy and ultimately must save the emperor. For tickets, visit yatssandiego.org.
A Thanksgiving health fair and open house will be held in La Mesa on Saturday, November 15th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the OM Center for Spiritual Living at 7232 University Avenue. This free event will feature demonstrations on how to achieve better health and fitness, craft exhibits, as well as seminars with experts offering solutions to life issues and everyday challenges. There will be drawings for prizes, a 50-50 raffle, and food. For more information, visit omspiritualcenter.org.
The Pomerado Brass Quintet will perform a free concert on Sunday, November 16th in the Mission Trails Regional Visitor Center at 3 p.m. The quintet performs a variety of music, including classical, marches, jazz, ragtime, Dixieland, and selections from Broadway musicals. For more information, visit mtrp.org.
Guitar virtuoso Jonathan Davis performs at Cuyamaca College Performing Arts Theater on Thursday, November 20th at 7:30 p.m. That's at Cuyamaca College Performing Arts Theater.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Lemon Grove Live on the Main Street Promenade will be held on November 22nd from 5 to 7 p.m. This event features the Phoenix Band on the Main Street Promenade performing country and western rock and roll and big band music.
Poway Center for the Performing Arts will present Woodstock, the musical, a live tribute to the original music fest that became a nexus for the counterculture generation. The performance will include local San Diego musicians Eve Sellis, Tim Flannery, Berkeley Hart, Back to the Garden Band, and dozens of special guests. For tickets, visit powayarts.org.
Project Wildlife will introduce you to the fascinating world of bats. On Saturday, November 22nd from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the Lakeside River Park, you can also meet Animal Ambassador Daisy, a Mexican free-tailed bat in the indoor classroom located on Lakeside's River Park property. Registration by November 17th is required and the space is limited. For more information and to register in advance for this free event, visit lakesideriverpark.org.
One of the most unusual holiday season traditions in East County is coming up, the 4th Annual Pomegranate Days celebration at Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona, and will be held on Saturday and Sunday, November 22nd and 23rd, from noon to 5 p.m. Festivities include camel rides, bird and camel shows, shopping for holiday gifts, and feeding pomegranates to camels. There is an admission fee, plus charges for camel rides and a barbecue. For details, visit cameldairy.com.
The Mother Goose Parade in El Cajon will roll out on Sunday, November 23rd with a new route and a new start time at 12:15 p.m. The largest parade of its kind, featuring fairy tale floats, marching bands, equestrian entries, and Santa Claus, will start on Ballantyne Street, head down Main Street in Johnson before ending at the Mother Goose Village in Parkway Plaza Shopping Center. The Mother Goose Village will be a two-day event, open Saturday and Sunday, November 22nd and 23rd. There will also be a red carpet on Main Street and WD Hall Drive at 10:30 a.m. before the parade kicks off. Visit MotherGooseParade.org for more information.
Get ready for the 3rd Annual Waddle and Trot 5K held on Thanksgiving Day, November 27th at 8 a.m. Pathways Community Church will host the Waddle and Trot, which benefits the Santee Santas and the Santee Food Bank. What better way to work off some calories before savoring your Thanksgiving feast? To register for the 5K or fun run, visit pathways.cc/waddleandtrot.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is a public service announcement for the Backcountry Land Trust and the Endangered Habitats Conservancy. Volunteers are needed to help restore the watershed along Alpine Creek and habitat on Alpine Boulevard. On Saturday, November 15th and 22nd from 1 to 4 p.m., volunteers will help plant native trees, shrubs, and ground cover species to enhance native habitat along this important wildlife corridor through Alpine. Volunteers will learn skills such as identifying and caring for native plants, propagation by cutting and dividing plant stocks, building gopher cages, planting hedgerows, and irrigation techniques. If you would like to volunteer, meet at 505 Alpine Boulevard at 1 p.m. on November 15th or 22nd. Wear long sleeves and pants, sturdy shoes, work gloves, and sun protection. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
A student at San Diego State University has died after falling five stories off of an apartment building near campus. She's been identified as Melissa Kennan, a sophomore who is studying psychology. The 19-year-old girl was on the roof of the building on November 7th at 4 a.m. with a man who told police that Kennan wanted to be daring and climbed out on a ledge, then lost her balance and fell. He told 10 News that he is afraid of heights and yet was unable to convince her to move away from the ledge. Kennan was rushed to a hospital by paramedics with a head injury and other trauma, but died shortly after 10 a.m. She belonged to the same sorority as another student who recently died of meningitis. Counseling is being offered for students who are impacted by the loss, and any student who needs counseling can call 619-594-5220. San Diego State's Vice President of Student Affairs, Eric Rivera, called the loss heartbreaking and said the community is deeply saddened by Melissa Kennan's passing. He adds, "Our heartfelt thoughts and prayers are with her family, friends, and loved ones who have shared with us how much Melissa loved SDSU. We will honor Melissa by sharing strength and support with one another as we process through this difficult time." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. Consultants hired by renewable energy companies in recent years have consistently claimed that there are no golden eagles in the Hakumba Boulevard planning areas where several major energy projects are proposed or planned. But two residents of Hakumba now report seeing golden eagles in the past 10 days, including one documented with a photograph. The first sighting, a pair of eagles, was over the town itself. The second was directly across from the Hakumba Solar Project and a proposed power line tie-in to the ECO substation. Golden eagles' populations are threatened in the San Diego region, with only 46 pairs remaining in the county, according to the Cleveland National Forest website, which states that eagles are very sensitive to disturbances by people. Power lines can electrocute raptors, and construction of any major project can be potentially disruptive. The first sighting in Hakumba was made on October 30th by well-known birdwatcher Eric Callen, who runs the website HakumbaBirding.com. He reported seeing a pair of golden eagles and provided a photograph of one. The second sighting was reportedly made by a resident in the Gray Mountain, Table Mountain area. Howard Cook, chair of the Hakumba Sponsor Group, the town's planning board, says, "The resident, who prefers not to be generally known but is extremely reliable, says a golden eagle can be seen most days on the ridgeline above his property." Cook notified officials in state and federal wildlife agencies and to the county to be included in the record for the Hakumba Solar Project proposal. An eagle expert hired to conduct studies for other projects, including Tule Wind, which the federal government approved, was convicted in federal court of withholding key information from wildlife authorities after pocketing hundreds of thousands of dollars from the wind industry. The recent sightings further bolster arguments by residents who contend that new studies are needed by reliable wildlife experts.
Now it's time for the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. Today we have a special holiday edition of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz, and I want to welcome our guests today, Raina and Leona.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, Raina and Leona, are you ready for the first question?
Yes, we are.
Okay. A new East County holiday tradition is the Waddle and Trot, which is set for Thanksgiving. What type of event is the Waddle and Trot?
Black Friday shopping?
It must be a new dance.
No, it's not either one of those things. Okay, let me give you some choices. Is it a turkey calling contest in Ramona, a 5K run for charity in Santee, a roundup at the Lakeside Rodeo of turkeys, or a mall walk for shoppers at Grossmont Center?
A turkey calling.
Nope.
A mall walk for shoppers.
That sounds like fun, but no. The right answer. Any more guesses? You're down to two. Is it the Lakeside Rodeo Roundup or the 5K run for charity?
5K run.
That's
Yay,
the right answer.
I got it.
Woohoo! You got it. Okay, one for Raina. Next question. What do wild turkeys and wild pigs in East County have in common?
They get stuffed.
Well, actually, that may be. That's a good answer. That wasn't the one I was thinking of.
But. You get eaten, that's for sure.
Okay, you know, I'm going to give you guys both a point for that. You came up with answers I didn't even think of. But just for fun, we'll read the other choices. Is the answer, neither one of them can fly, they're protected from hunting, they're not native to our region, or they are elusive and hard to see?
Pigs don't fly?
They're elusive and hard to see.
Well, the pigs are pretty elusive, but those turkeys are everywhere. You drive through Julian and they're all over the place.
Oh, yeah. They'll chase your car.
The answer is, actually, that neither one of them is native to our region.
I thought of that.
What did I say? Invasive species. Okay.
Next. The turkeys come from Foster Farm.
They come from Safeway.
Okay. Leona, Raina. Lemon Grove celebrates the holiday season with an event featuring a giant one of these. What huge item is the centerpiece of their celebration?
Lemon?
Santa?
Nope, it's not a lemon and it's not Santa. Is it a snowman, a Christmas tree, a bonfire, or, well, lemon was one of the guesses, so you're down to three choices left now.
A bonfire.
That's right. It's a really? Bonfire. A giant, wow. Huge bonfire. Wow. Yeah, it's kind of like Burning Man in East County, you know? Okay, Alpine's Winter Festival brings something special in for the children. What is it?
I know this.
It's ice skating.
Nope.
Gifts.
Nope. Vieja says, that's nope.
Gifts? Presents?
They may do that. I don't know. But the choices I had were toys from Santa's workshop, snow, reindeer, or penguins.
Reindeer.
Nope, not reindeer.
Penguins?
Leonie?
Snow.
At Christmas? Penguins?
No! It's snow. They actually make it snow and the kids can go sledding and everything.
That's wonderful.
Okay. Forget Rockefeller Plaza. Where can you find an even larger outdoor ice rink? In fact, it's the largest one in Southern California.
As I said before, it's Viejas.
That's right. Viejas Outlet Mall in Alpine is the correct answer. Okay. El Cajon's Mother Goose Parade each year ends with the arrival of someone special. Who is it?
A goose.
Nope, the goose is first. Is it the Grand Marshal, the mayor, Santa Claus?
The mayor.
San Diego.
It's Santa Claus. Oh. Ho, ho, ho. Okay, which holiday celebration is held each year on the top of Mount Helix? You don't know?
Happy Helix Christmas.
Is it a choral concert, a Handel's Messiah, a holiday wine tasting festival, a community caroling party, or reindeer races?
Reindeer races.
That would be a lot of fun.
I want to go.
Leona, do you have a guess?
Well, I would think in Mount Helix is probably tasting wine.
No, it's a caroling party.
Oh, caroling, that's
I live there. You walk up and go caroling all the way up the hill. Okay, where can you find Scrooge every December in East County?
At my house.
At the bank.
At the bank. I don't know that. I may be both. The answers were, the choices were, Grossmont College, Julian Town Hall, Lamplighter Theater in La Mesa, or Santee City Hall.
Lamplighter Theater?
Nope.
Santee City Hall.
Actually, it's the Julian Town Hall. They do a production of it every Christmas. Two more questions. Okay.
I'm not doing too well.
La Mesa's annual Christmas in the Village evokes a bygone era. Which one is it?
Era?
The 19th century.
19th century. Well, you're kind of close. Is it the Wild West, the Gold Rush days, the golden age of silent movies in the 1920s, or is it the Victorian era?
Victorian.
Raina is right. It's the Victorian era. Okay.
Oh, my.
Last one. One East County facility does something very unusual with pumpkins and turkeys every holiday season. How are they used?
They smash them?
Actually, San Diego State does do a pumpkin drop, but they don't drop turkeys. Thankfully for the turkeys.
Well, that's good.
They drop turkeys out of a
helicopter.
Nope, not that I know of. The choices are, do they use them for target practice at a shooting range?
Oh, my gosh.
Decorating and displaying at an art gallery, auctioning off for an East County charity, or feeding hungry lions at a big cat rescue facility?
Auctioning off.
No.
Feeding the big cats?
Yes, that's how.
Oh,
that's
my
the right answer.
I think the most unlikely.
Well, thanks to both of you for joining us for another edition of the East County Magazine Trivia. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays.
is.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.